you like some water?
Sure, that'd be great.
Ice or just plain?
Just plain, please.
Good afternoon. Today is February 24th. My name is Kathy Lupi, and I am at the house of Sophie Burden Echeverria out on Middle Mesa Drive at Los Caballeros in Wickenburg, Arizona. This is an interview for the Oral History Project that is funded by the Arizona Humanities under the auspices of the Desert Caballeros Western Museum. And we are here today to learn some history. So thank you for that water. Beautiful. And shall we get started?
Let's go.
Okay. So the first question is,
were you born?
Are
we in the right place?
We are.
I was born in La Jolla because it was too hot. My birthday is the 4th of July, and my father had mercy on my mother and took her to La Jolla to get out of the heat. And she went down to the beach to look at a beached whale, and it smelled so bad she got sick and dashed across the street to Scripps Memorial and had me. So that was my beginning, thanks to the whale.
That's quite a way to come into the world.
It was. It was in a big splash, as usual. And my dad ran the Wind and Sea there for a number of summers, and it was quite wonderful.
Is that a guest ranch there?
No, it's a thing on the beach.
Oh.
In La Jolla.
Oh.
And it was just summer.
Okay.
Just a little summer thing. And then we came back here to Wickenburg. Probably in September. I didn't notice. My God, I'd just been born.
Right.
So that's where I was born. Just by a mistake. I should have been an Arizonan, but it was too hot.
Speaking of your parents, can you tell me the story of how they came to Wickenburg in Arizona?
I can tell you that story. My father had rheumatic fever and had to leave Phillips Exeter Academy in his junior year. And his mother brought him out to Arizona, and they took him off the train in Phoenix on a stretcher. And I have no idea how this miracle happened, but he ended up, I think, at the Weaver Ranch up here east of Wickenburg. And Bob White was up there, too, getting well from something or other. And those two guys got well. And as they got well, they used to go up to Prescott and sit in the bar and pretend they were cowboys. Oh, they wanted to be cowboys. And the cowboys up there made fun of them. Oh, my God, they made fun of them. But anyway, they got well, and my dad decided he was going to stay in Arizona forever since he had been cured here. And he wanted to be a rancher, but he didn't know the front end from the back end of a cow, so he decided to be a guest rancher. And he went down to Simpson's, which was then Old Lady O'Brien's Bar FX, and he leased that. And he decided to have this guest ranch, and it was very primitive, but it was doable. And he went into the Chamber of Commerce to find out how to be a guest rancher and how to get guests.
Because he started the chamber.
No, he started it here. He went to the Phoenix Chamber of Commerce.
Phoenix,
and this family came in, the Fletchers came in from New England, and they were looking for a guest ranch. Dr. Fletcher was a great adventurer, and my father saw Sophie Fletcher. And he said, I'm going to marry that filly.
Wow.
Right off the bat, he spotted her. And he went over and charmed them. My dad charmed anybody he wanted to. He was very, very charming. And they were the first guests on Remuda.
So that ties right into the beginning of Remuda Ranch.
That was the beginning of Remuda. They were the first. Dad dashed home and made some beds and got some food and fiddled around and got ready for them. And they arrived. And they were adventurers. They used to do a lot of camping, and they were very fun people. So that's how they got started. And my dad courted my mom. They had ridden horses, English saddles, in their private schools. Oh, God, poor things. They were raised by nannies and in private boarding schools and all that. But since they knew how to ride, they quickly learned how to ride Western.
Okay.
And they used to ride up Turtleback out here. And Turtleback is still a haven for rattlesnakes. There are rattlesnake dens up there. And they used to go up and shoot rattlesnakes. That was their courtship. Doesn't that sound romantical?
Well, for Arizona, I suppose that is romance.
Oh, very romantical. And somebody asked, what's the name of your ranch? Well, with the lease, where there were three horses. And my dad said, is going to be Remuda Ranch, named after those three horses. Of course, Remuda means the string of horses to herd the cattle with. It's kind of a laughable thing for three horses to be the Remuda, but that's how it was named that. And for many years we said Remuda, but finally somebody who spoke Spanish told us it's Remuda.
Remuda. Okay.
But anyway,
yeah,
that was just a little thing. So that's how it got his name.
Okay.
And so Mom and Dad and Dr. Fletcher built the ranch. And then Mrs. O'Brien, do you want to hear all this?
Well, it ties into how your family came and how the Remuda
got started. Old Lady O'Brien said, if Jack Burton can do it, I can do it. And they came home from Phoenix one day, and all their stuff was outside the gate, and the gate was locked. Well, what do you know? So my granddad and my dad went over across the river, across the Hacienda, the other side of the river from Wickenburg, and bought a bunch of land from Garcia's and
Ignacio, I wish I knew.
Yeah.
Garcia.
Yeah, I don't. I wish I knew the names. My brother John may have known the names. But a group of Mexican families had small holdings over there, and they bought those. And I think it ended up to be about 1,200 deeded acres. I might be wrong about that, but it was something like that. But it had access to unlimited, clear to Prescott, BLM and state land, just wide open, wide open. And they started building the ranch.
Okay.
I had been born 9 months to the day, practically, of the marriage on the Simpson Ranch. I wasn't born on the Simpson Ranch. I was born in La Jolla, but they were living on the Simpson Ranch.
So you're the oldest?
Yes, I'm the first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
And so my brother John was born 13 months later.
Okay.
And so then there was an old tin shack on Remuda with a dirt floor, and Dad hung a sheet or something between the across half of it. So he and Mom had one half, and I had the other half, and then John. And when it rained, Dad hung pots on baling wire under the holes in the roof. And I have pictures of me and John playing in the mud puddles in our little tricycle. Oh, God, it was wonderful.
Oh, that's great ranch life memories.
Oh, it was just wonderful.
And the water in the buckets was...
Blink, 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 rainwater.
Yeah, and you probably used that somewhere. I'm sure.
Yeah. I know my mother made soap. I remember her making this lye soap. How in the world she knew how to do that, I don't know, but she used to make that lye soap. And when I swore, which I did, because we had cowboys... She washed my mouth out with it.
How'd that taste?
Horrible. Yeah. But it didn't break me.
Well, good. Lye soap doesn't break a bad mouth.
Yeah. So anyway, that was the beginning of Remuda. And I can remember when my dad bought a cement mixer. He was so proud of that damn thing. It was hilarious. He just loved his cement mixer, and they built those buildings themselves with their own hands, and they had plumbers and electricians and things, of course.
Okay.
But mostly Mom and Dad were out there shoveling and mixing and building it all themselves.
So by the time you were old enough to have memories, they were still building and still expanding.
And Dr. Fletcher thought it was improper for us to be living in the mud hut. So it was a tin hut with a mud floor. He built the three-room cottage, which was, I think that Remuda, which the Meadows bought Remuda, and I think they took that out, unfortunately, but he built us this little cottage for the kids, for John and Dana and me and my mom and dad. And so we got to move into that. However, when we got too many guests, grab the bedrolls, go to the hay barn.
Okay. You got moved out.
Oh, we got shifted all over the place to accommodate the guests.
Right, because they come first.
Of course.
And was that year-round, 12 months?
No, it was, we closed on May 1st and we opened on October 1st.
Okay.
Yeah, and the weather was bearable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so anyway, that's how we got its start.
And ranching life was always busy. You were always...
Oh, all the time, yeah. We rarely saw Mom and Dad. They were really, really busy. But that was fine with us. Mm-hmm. We just did what we wanted to do. We had a wonderful time.
Yeah. You kind of raised yourself.
Yes, we did. the cowboys helped us. We had a cowboy from the time I was about 6 years old until I was, I think, 15, 12, right along in there, Hank Ulrich. And he pretty well raised John and me. Dana was not so happy with the Krill, but John, he was 5 years younger than John.
Okay.
But John and I, Hank pretty well raised us. And the other cowboys, Hank did not swear. He was very nice. But the other cowboys did, and so we learned to do all that.
Oh, good. Good. Like any good ranch child would.
Yes, we did. We were ranch kids.
Can you tell me, like, maybe what a just a regular daily routine would have been for you?
When we were little?
When you were young, yes.
Yeah, we started school, first grade. Before then, I don't really remember. When we were little, we played in the mud puddles, and we played with our cats and dogs, and, you know, we were happy little grungy little ranch kids. But Mom and Dad started the Remuda Ranch School. And it was just a little two-room schoolhouse up on the hill. And they hired Donna and Minor Keeler to run it. And she was our teacher, and we went to that school. I went through eighth grade, and so did John.
Okay.
So did Dana. We all three went through it. Actually, I think John and Dana went to Wickenburg schools, maybe seventh and eighth grade. I was gone by then. But there we went to our little schoolhouse. We went there from 8 to 12. Then at 12, we went to the children's dining room, where we ate. We never ate with our parents. And then as soon as we were through with lunch, goodbye. And we'd go to the Krill. We each had our own little horse. We'd get on those little horses, and we'd gallop all over everywhere, hell-bent for election. Nobody knew where we were. Nobody asked where we were. Nobody worried about us. We had a wonderful time.
Very different now.
Oh, yes. Now with insurance, you can't do that. And I'm quite sure that if what we used to do, if we did it now, if children did it now, they'd be turned into Child Protective Services and put in foster care. Because we were really, really little wild animals.
Mm-hmm.
And
During this time, did you, like, have a notice between, like, weekday and weekend?
Yes. The week was school. We rode every afternoon. The weekends we had gymkhanas, little rodeos. They were actually gymkhanas, but they were also rodeos. The cowboys would ride the bucking horses and rope the calves and ride the team rope the steers and all that stuff. And then the guests and we would go and do our little pole bending and horse racing and egg racing, and the guests would all participate in it. And it was very fun, musical chairs. The other guest ranches participated and came over. And we all had, every weekend we had these wonderful gymkhanas.
You burden children were probably quite skilled in all these games.
Oh, we were good.
I suppose.
But my little horse, Baldy, whom I dearly loved, I used to take him in my bedroom with me because nobody noticed. I could do what I wanted. I took my dear horse in my bedroom. But he wasn't very fast, so we didn't win very often. But we had a good time.
And he had a good place to sleep at night.
Well, he didn't sleep there.
Oh.
But, if I wanted to go in for anything, I'd just bring him in.
Oh, you'd just bring him along.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
So.
How did this routine change as you got older and older than eighth grade? Like, now you're going to high school.
As I finished eighth grade, Dr. Fletcher, who was an eminent physician in Providence, Rhode Island, eminent, said, he announced to me, you are not fit to be in our family. You're not fit. So he shipped me off to Lincoln School, which is a beautiful private girls' school in Providence, Rhode Island, to get me fit. Get me fit. So my first 2 years of high school were back east at Lincoln School, and I'm so grateful for that time because I really learned a lot.
Did you?
It was just fascinating, and I just really loved it, though it was hard. It was difficult, but it was a great time. But then my dad died, and I came back to Wickenburg High.
Okay.
So I did have some 2 years in Wickenburg,
okay,
in my junior and senior years.
When you were off on the East Coast, how often were you able to come home?
Just in summer.
Okay.
Just in summer, yeah, I didn't
come home. So holidays and stuff, you stayed there at the...
Yeah, my aunt, Uncle Pete, who's famous in Wickenburg, and his wife, Aunt Billy, they lived in the old family house, which had been in the family for generations. which was only 2 blocks from the school. So I lived with them for those 2 years. I did not have to be a boarder.
Okay.
And which was really wonderful for me. It was great. Except Billy said that I was not fit to be in the house and moved me to the attic. I can't believe that happened to me, but it did.
Yeah.
Oh, it was really tough.
Was it like prison?
No. In fact, I liked it. I had all to myself.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't think I had any ego. I really didn't give a darn what people thought. I just did my own thing.
Must have been from being born out there by the whale.
I think so. So
wow.
I was very happy there, and I loved Lincoln. I had dear, dear friends that I kept for years.
Okay.
And did really well in that school, in spite of having a sort of a shaggy grammar school.
Okay.
But I did well. I won the science prize for the whole school and did a whole bunch of good stuff. And was really good in tennis and really good in modern dance. And I had
really
a great
blossomed
time.
There.
And I had a boyfriend, Wendell Phillips. He had placed third in the National Figure Skating Championships, and he taught me how to figure skate, and I could figure skate backwards with my leg up.
Wow.
And I could jump.
You wouldn't have learned that at the Ramuda Ranch.
Oh, God, it was fun. Anyway, that isn't Wickenburg history. Get back to business here.
Okay. Back to business. Did John and Dana go off to private schools, or did
No, they stayed.
Okay.
They weren't as bad as I was.
Okay. And now, like, you had talked about some of your hired help. Dave Ulrich, I think.
Hank Ulrich. A-L-R-I-C-H. Hank Ulrich.
He kind of raised you.
He did.
You talk about some of the other hired help that you interacted with and how your parents hired them? And
well, we had a number of cowboys, Pud and Tex Adair, who were very pleasing to all the ranch ladies. Oh, my God. Romance flourished on Ramuda Ranch, and drinking started at breakfast and went all day and all night. It was very wild. It really was. People just had a blast.
It's vacation time,
vacation time. And my mom and dad had this rule, no last names and no discussion of who you were, where you came from, what your business was, first names only. We had to not do that for some of the very prestigious guests, like Ernest Simpson, who owns Simpson Shiplines, and is the father-in-law of Wallace Simpson, who married the king. And he was such an honorable fellow that he was always Mr. Simpson.
Okay.
And he had a French secretary, Leah, and she was his secretary, and they lived together. Oh, it was lovely.
I like that first names only and that confidentiality rule.
Yes, and because of that, everything was very fluid and very easy.
Okay.
And a lot of fun all the time. And,
okay.
And my mom and dad were very wonderful at preventing cliques and making sure that everybody had fun. If there was some poor little widow sitting alone, it was my job to go cheer her up. And I learned to do that real well.
Perfect.
Yeah, and so we made sure that everybody had a good time all the time.
Yeah. With the family, with the children, and your grandparents and uncles and aunts, maybe they didn't have to hire a lot of, like, housekeepers and
cooks. Oh, no, we had a big staff. I think the staff was close to 30 people.
Wow.
We had gardeners and maids and waitresses and cowboys, and most of them were just good people. I loved our staff. And they helped us. I don't know where they came from.
Okay.
A lot of them were local. A lot of them were local.
Any Native Americans or Hispanics?
No, we didn't. I think we may have had some Hispanic gardeners. And Joe Quesada, who was a real vaquero from Mexico. I mean, he was an elegant man, elegant. And he was my dad's good friend. And he's famous in Wickenburg. There's a picture of him in the museum.
Hmm.
And he with his big black horse. Big black
I'll
horse.
I'll look for that.
Yeah. And he and my dad were good friends. And there were some others, because I can remember visiting them in Wickenburg and being horrified that they slept on the floor. And I thought, wow, that's really wild. Not computing that we did too.
Right.
When the ranch filled up.
Right.
We moved, we took our little bedrolls and slept wherever.
Yeah. But they did it on a regular basis more. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. We knew some poor people. And my mom was very interested in Indians and did a lot of charity work with Native Americans. We can't say Indians anymore. It's politically incorrect.
That's right.
Native Americans.
Yep.
I'm a Native American myself. I was born here.
Yes.
But I guess that doesn't count.
But she did a lot of work with them.
She did.
Locally, or did she travel to do that?
During our teen years, I can't remember the dates, but 5, 6, 7 years, every summer we went to Havasupai Canyon down in the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
It's a wonderful place, and we'd go down there from 2 to 6 weeks. And the Indians just adored us. They adored my mother. I don't think they paid much attention to us. In fact, one time when Dom and I were down there with the family, one of the Indians said, "Hey, Dom, why you marry that ugly woman? Why you like that ugly girl?"
What about Homer
Manikachaw?
Yeah, Manikachaw.
Yeah, that's right. We had Manikachaw. So we had some.
Okay, was he Yavapai?
Do you remember?
Havasupai.
Yeah.
Havasupai.
It's actually a separate tribe.
Yeah. Havasupais are a tribe that have lived in the bottom of the Grand Canyon forever.
Right.
And mother
discovered. And he worked at the ranch. Like,
yeah.
Did you bring him home one?
Don't know what the, do you remember how she got him home? Got him to the ranch?
I mean, he was young.
Yeah.
He was only 14, 15 or something.
Something like that.
He was
a
kid.
She brought him, you know, hoping to get him educated and all that, but.
Okay.
I don't really know what happened to him, but she loved him, and we got along just really, really well with him.
He died in a drunk driving accident twice. Like
he did. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was the coolest guy. He was probably my first friend of my life, and he would go around the ranch in this old, like 36 Ford pickup with no doors on it, and he'd get all the trash from all the buildings, and he and I would go to the dump.
The name of that pickup was Lydia Pinkham.
Oh, great!
It had a name. Anyway. I didn't remember that. Maybe it's one of those things that was so
you
sad I
forgot
known.
It. You may not have known. I asked what became of him, and I think Dana or John told me what happened to him. So.
Okay.
There weren't any Native Americans around Wickenburg that I know of really too much. He was brought down from Havasupai. But
right, like by the Burden family?
Yeah.
Oh.
He was almost like a foster son in a way. Or his parents weren't with him. They brought him down.
I'm just trying to make sure we can get your voice on this, if your voice will pick up.
Move over here, Dave.
So,
I could.
Yeah.
Because
that's interesting history. That's a name that I have never heard, or it does relate to Wickenburg history.
What, Havasupai?
That you brought...
Manikachaw.
Yeah.
Homer.
Back to Wickenburg, and he worked at the Ramuda Ranch. Yeah.
There were no Indians around here. The nearest ones were all the way up by Camp Verde.
Okay.
By that time.
Yeah.
Okay.
They'd been all relocated.
But still Hispanics. There was still quite a few Hispanics in the area,
I would
right?
say mostly Hispanics in Wickenburg.
Mm-hmm.
There's people who contest that. But if you look at the names, that's who was farming along the river.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of non-Hispanic, European-type people all in the mines all around here. Lots of Mexicans, too, but from all different European-type countries and Chinese. But in town here, it seemed to be the Spanish Mexicans that ran the farm, had the farms.
And did your mom and dad hire them at the ranch? Were they some of the cowboys that worked?
I don't think we ever had a Mexican cowboy. I think we had some gardeners. And we may have had some maids, but I really don't remember that. Do you?
No, I don't think so.
Do you want to?
They were mainly on their own ranches, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, and they had all these little farms up and down the river. From the way back from the very, very beginning, they supplied food, hay for the stock, for the miners.
Okay.
And they were a very important part of early early history.
Okay.
But we didn't have that much to do with them.
Okay. Yeah. What about some of your memorable guests, your most memorable guests? First names only.
First names only.
Really? Oh. You can't have her?
No, I'm just, that's one thing that your mom had said was a rule at the ranch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't Robert Mitchum there?
Yeah, Robert Mitchum was there with his family for several years, and they were delightful. Actually, there was something, I think, in the museum I saw recently about him being in Wickenburg. But he was a delightful guest, drank a great deal, very fun, played polo and say, deal, damn it, deal, damn it. He was delightful, and I was off at school, and I didn't know them very well, but he was there. Joel McCrae and his family were there. Tyrone Power drifted in with a bunch of yummy, yummy ladies, and who else was there? A bunch of Hollywood people.
So there was a direct connection to Hollywood and Wickenburg.
Sort of, yeah. Mm-hmm. There was, and they had a great time. They loved it here because nobody paid any attention to them. They were people.
I bet.
Just people here, mm-hmm. and which was very fun. Mm-hmm. And I remember Baby Brigiotti. Baby. She was married to a famous concert pianist, and she was really wild. She taught me to sing. I used to sing Near You. And she wanted to be free, so she got in her Jeep and said, I want to be free, and drove zipping down the hill right through the fence. Took the fence out. And she decided that she wanted to find God, so she went to a Catholic church. They kicked her out because her dumplings were boiling over. She had gorgeous dumplings. Those dumplings. And she displayed them to the best advantage. Oh, baby was a kick. She was wonderful to me. She liked me, and she taught me a whole bunch of stuff. And she was a sort of a surrogate aunt or something.
I think I do remember you writing about her.
About baby. Our godparents, Ed and Jane Havey, were dear, dear people. Very Catholic. But they failed to get me straight.
It's been tough getting you straight, Sophie.
I just don't straighten out very well.
You don't seem to.
No, I don't. I have to do my own thing. But anyway, the Havies were wonderful and taught my brothers and me a lot about love. New Englanders don't touch. No hug, no kiss. Never, ever heard the word I love you, ever.
Your parents?
From our parents or from our family. They just didn't stoop to those low levels. Isn't that sad? And
no
what
way.
they missed. Yeah.
Yes.
But yes. The Havies made us feel really loved. I can remember they lived in a room. They came in October and stayed till May.
Okay.
They loved it here. And in later years, they actually bought a little house in Wickenburg and moved here till Ed died. But they had a big bed. And they used to put John and Dane and me in that big bed with them. And we'd all sit there together with our arms around each other and talk and laugh. And it was wonderful.
Great memories.
Very dear people.
Yeah, great memories.
And then there was a little boy, David. I can't remember his last name. And he was a severe asthmatic. And mostly he had to stay in his room. And he loved classical music. And I used to sit there with, I used to love to go hang out with Dave and listen to his beautiful classical music. Loved classical music ever since.
Did he come every year?
He came for a number of years.
Yeah.
I don't know how many. I don't remember how many, but he was a dear friend, and we listened to a lot of music.
Right. Yeah. That with that guest ranching, there's people you just see every year.
Yeah,
and
they
you make friends.
Used to be, and they used to stay almost always a month, and some of them stayed 2 or 3 months, and there were numbers of people who would bring their children, and they'd go to the school. And then the laws changed, and schools were financed by the number of attendance days. And so people could no longer check their kids out and bring them to this remote school, which is very sad because they used to bring their books, and they'd return to their schools ahead of the other kids. It was really, really wonderful.
That was a great school.
It was a great little school. And
tell me about how it started, if you don't mind, how the remote school started. And
I don't know. Mom and Dad just decided we should have a private school, built 2 little houses, and one, the teacher and her husband and her son, Billy, lived there, and the other one was, it had 2 rooms. And that's where we studied. It had nice little desks and nice sunny windows. It was very pleasant, very nice. And so Donna
was
taught.
Was it certified through the state?
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I don't know what the arrangement was.
Mm-hmm.
But I know Billy had trained Donna. Her name was Donna. She was succeeded by Pete's wife, Billy. But she had trained as a teacher in California. You know California. So it was pretty liberal, pretty wild.
Okay.
Pretty wild. And in fact, when I went to Lincoln School, I had to be tutored to catch up before I went. All that summer before I went, I had a tutor.
Okay.
Bill O'Brien. He was a real good teacher in Wickenburg. Was that his name? O'Brien. I think that was his name. But anyway, he got me caught up, so I did all right.
Perfect.
But Donna really concentrated on the guest kids, and John and Dana and I kind of drifted along and had a lot of fun.
So this school was operating for several years.
Oh, many years. Many years. Yeah. Many, many years. And even after.
The
Little Ramuda School.
Mm-hmm. So, 1932.
Other ranches sent their kids over there too. It wasn't just Ramuda.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it was a good little
school. The school there was probably around 1970, something right in there, I think. No, it was after that. It was like 10 or 11 the last time I was school.
Was Aunt Billy the teacher?
No, it was in 1970, yeah. Huh?
Was Aunt
Billy? Aunt Billy was the teacher when I was there. Great Aunt Billy was the teacher.
That's a great pizza.
So we're talking a 40-year time span.
Yeah.
They had a hitching post right out in front. Great.
Yep, ride our horses up there.
Yeah. Something like Little House on the Prairie.
I guess. Yeah.
Like
we didn't.
Santa Fe style or Adobe.
Okay.
Yeah. Adobe style building.
Yeah.
High Chaparral.
High Chaparral. Okay, that was high right. More like High Chaparral.
We didn't have television, so I never saw a Little House on the Prairie.
Oh. Okay.
We had radio, and we were allowed to listen to The Lonely Stranger, and The Shadow, and some of that stuff on Sundays.
Right.
But we were culturally deprived when it came to TV. Never saw any of that stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to have affected you in any way, though.
Hope not. Another thing we did on the ranch is we had stick horse ranches. And we used to cut the yuccas down, the best yucca staffs, and make them into our stick horses. And we'd go to the ranch dump or the ranch shed or something and get lumber and old crates. Things used to come in wooden crates. And we'd make these remarkable little ranches. And our gardener, Nels Mordson, taught me how to do carpentry. And we made all these remarkable little hideouts.
Oh.
And the guest kids loved it.
I bet.
And we used to have stick horse rodeos and stick horse shows. And
I bet.
Was very fun.
Wow.
Yeah, and we got into lots of mischief one time. John and Dana and I and Billy Keeler, the teacher's son, we got the guest kids to help us, and we built a tunnel, a long tunnel with a big meeting room. We were smart enough to put boards across the top so it didn't cave in. But, we had fun in our secret tunnel. And so some horrid little girl told her parents, and the shit hit the fan. She was horrified.
That was the end of the tunnel?
End of the tunnel.
So we
did lots of mischievous, fun things, and the guest kids adored us. They just followed
us
around.
Wouldn't it be fun to interview one of the guest ranch kids as an adult and how it changed their life?
Oh, yeah. They remain, some of them remain friends forever. The Kettering kids, the General Motors Ketterings, they remain friends forever. In fact, I visited them in Cherry Creek in Denver, and they said, Tootie, where's your stick horse? My nickname is Tootie. And I was offended because I had on a really swell suit.
Yeah.
It was all city-fied.
Yeah.
But anyway, they remained friends forever.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it changed their life and molded them to who they are today.
Yeah. I think it did.
What about the Ramuda Rodeo? That was something that your father started.
My dad started that, and first it was a rodeo with cowboys, but then we had the Gymkhana part too, and
And was there was an arena. He also built that arena there. And was that the first arena in Wickenburg?
The first arena in Wickenburg, and that was the beginning of the national professional Cowboys thing. And I'm a little confused. Everett Bowman was part of that, and there were some other famous Cowboys who were part of that whose names I didn't know, so I don't really remember. But it started out, I think they called themselves the Turtles. And then it went into, I don't know the progression. You would find that out from some old cowboy.
Western Golden Country Club knows all about that.
You know does he?
Is he the one that writes letters to the editor?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's a retired colonel. He knows, he's a rodeo guy. He knows all
he
about
know,
that.
And that would be very interesting.
Maybe he's somebody that we need to get on the list for an interview.
Oh, he'll be good.
I don't think he's a Wickenburg guy, but he's been here a long time. What does it take to be a Wickenburg guy?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was born here like that, but he moved here. I think he's from South Arizona. I talked to him extensively years ago. He's from Globe or something, but I could be wrong about that. A long time.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's a good name to add to.
Yeah, because he'd know, because I was... probably never really knew about all of it because I was still pretty little.
Right.
But
when
I was very,
started.
Very proud of Dad that he started all that.
He was kind of a entrepreneur. He was a bit ahead of his time.
Way ahead. Yeah, we were told that he was sure, had he lived, he would have been the governor of Arizona, which made us feel very proud.
Sure, certainly.
And one of the congressmen said, I would have been the governor too because I mouthed off to him. He said, you're going to be the governor. And I thought... but we were on, I can't remember exactly how it happened, but anyway, I remember talking to him, and I can't remember who he was, but my dad, we were told that he would have been the governor. He started the Chamber of Commerce here. It used to be the Roundup Club.
Okay.
He started the Dad started the Roundup Club.
Okay.
And he was head of the school board at one point, and Dad was very active, but he was not well. He died when he was... only 39 from his rheumatic heart.
Yeah, that's really young.
Very young. Yeah.
I understand that it was him that deemed Wickenburg the Dude Ranch capital of the world and got the board up.
He wouldn't have done that because he thought it was insulting to call them dudes. They were always guests.
Really?
Yes. He said, they're not dudes, they're guests. So he would not have done that.
Oh.
Well, who started the Dude Ranch Capital?
I don't know.
I thought Dude didn't have the sort of derogatory connotation until much, much later.
Well, this is good history.
That's what
here.
Dad said, though. Dad said it was a guest ranch. It was not a Dude Ranch.
What about this idea of Dudeos, where...
I never heard that.
This is something in the history that I've learned through... It's called a dudeo instead of a rodeo. It is for dudes only. And to me, it sounds like more of the gymkhana that you talk about on Sundays or on the weekends that you did at the ranch.
Oh, my dad would have been horrified because it's insulting.
I've never heard that word in my life.
I have never heard it either.
Dudeo.
Dudeo. It's a good name, except it's, again, it's dude.
Rusty. Yeah. I don't know. I never heard of that.
Oh, it's...
Oh, our club.
Yeah.
No, well, this is how history gets rewritten, and we find mistakes, and we can correct them. So this is what oral history is about. This is a great...
No, we never heard that.
Okay. And Jack Burton did not deem Wickenburg the Dude Ranch capital of the world.
He may have said it was a guest ranch capital.
Mm-hmm.
But he would not have used the word dude.
Dude. Yeah. Okay.
But he may have said it was a guest ranch.
All right.
There were 7 guest ranches back then, I think, if I'm correct. And
back then, is this pre-World War II or post-World War II?
Pre. After World War II, things slacked off. Some of the guest ranches went down. You could get on a plane and go to Europe or... the Caribbean as cheaply as you could come to Arizona. And also customs changed. On the guest ranch, you appeared at breakfast at 8. And if you didn't, you didn't get breakfast. Well, now people want it a lot more slack. And so they're pansies now. Pansies.
Yes. I would agree.
Yeah, so it was different.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe the height of the Dude Ranch or the Guest Ranch
era
was pre-World War II.
I think so, yeah. During World War II, the ranch was converted into housing for military staff.
Okay.
And the officers and the medical people were there.
Many of the guest ranches in town were affiliated with the war effort.
Yeah, we did that.
Which all served Echevarria Field.
Right.
Their Army Air Force base out here.
Mm-hmm. They learned to do water stuff in the pool.
It's a hangar in the runway.
Yeah. Okay.
Echevarria Field. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then post-World War II, then there tended to be more of these pansy guest ranches, but then there was tennis and golfing and Los Caballeros.
Yeah, this started in it started before then. When did Los Caballeros start? Anyway,
58, I believe.
Was it? Three guests, Max Maxwell, Squire McGuire, and
Dallas Gantz.
No, not Dallas. It was another one of our guests, three of our guests. They wanted to buy Remuda. My dad had died. My mom was having a terrible time. Poor mom. And they wanted to buy Remuda, but she wouldn't sell it. She was saving it for John and Dana. So they came over and bought land here and built this place. And they took our manager, Dallas Gantz, whom my father had hired as a dishwasher way, way back when. And my dad recognized his intelligence and really liked him and trained him to be his assistant manager. And he also went down and trained in hotel restaurant management at Camelback Inn with Jack Stewart. And I don't know what the timing was. He also went to Bishop's Lodge in Santa Fe. My dad ran Bishop's Lodge in Santa Fe for three summers with Dallas. And Dallas's first wife, Rose, died, and he married Edie, lovely, elegant Edie. And that was the beginning of his real big success as a manager here.
Okay.
And meanwhile, Ramuda, my mother was, I don't blame her, poor mom, she became an alcoholic. And we decided to sell the ranch in 1968. So that was the end of Ramuda for us. It was very tragic.
Yeah.
And very tragic. And she, oh, my poor mom, she really suffered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heartbreak is.
Yeah. Terrible. My dad was very sick for 3 years before he died.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, the ranch just very bad time.
Mm-hmm. But she hung on to it, and she even has, November 7th is Sophie Burden Day?
Yes. Well, she was famous. She was the guest ranch queen of the, what was it? Guest ranch queen of the, head of the guest ranch women of the state. I've forgotten exactly what the governor recognized her, and everybody knew Sophie Burden, and everybody loved her until she really went down with her alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very tragic. It's horrible,
tragic
horrible disease, horrible disease.
Yes.
So,
yeah. But you saw her in her better days.
Oh, yeah. She was magnificent.
Yeah.
She was very funny. Oh, she was funny.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had a sister. This is in my books. Kate, redheaded Kate, who was a little bit wild. And after we had sold the ranch, some of the guests came back. Guests came back for years because they loved my mother. And one of them took me aside and said, "We always thought that your Aunt Kate was perhaps practicing some high-end prostitution." And I said, "Oh, I can't believe that." I'll ask my mother, and I went and I asked Mom. And my mother said, "Heavens, no. She was a fun-loving girl, but she never charged." And my mom, she had lots of very witty little things to say.
Oh, yeah.
She was funny. Yeah. She was very funny. She was a remarkable woman.
Yes, she certainly was.
Yes. So what else are we ambling too much?
We're getting through this, and
somewhat.
Yes, we are. The interaction with the other Dude Ranches. Like, when there were 7 dude ranches pre-World War II, what was the interaction with the other dude ranches?
Oh, very friendly, very cooperative.
We talked about the children coming to school, so
and
there
we
was
shared,
that.
We all rode to each other's rodeos and gymkhanas, and very friendly, good relationship.
Picnics.
We had picnics and square dancing. Oh, my God, we had a lot of square dances.
Okay.
And we'd have them over at the Flying E Barn and the Kale Barn. Very friendly relationship with all of them.
It was like a big extended family then, could you say?
I was probably too doing my own thing to really know, but I would say it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And you lived in town, so that means you did all your services in town. Well,
no,
your
we
mom
didn't.
And dad.
No,
like,
no, we never lived in town. We always lived on the ranch.
So is that outside of city limits, or was it at the time?
Oh, yeah, it's out in the country. It's 2 miles up the river, on the other side of the river.
Jack Burden Road.
Jack Burden Road is up on the end of, not
oh,
quite the
I
end.
I always thought
yeah.
that was in
it's
city limits.
It's the Meadows
limits.
Now.
Right.
The Meadows bought it, and it is now a treatment center for...
I think it's been annexed now, but that's very
okay.
recent.
Okay.
I think that was it was only annexed in the last 10 years, but you can check out the town.
Okay,
yeah.
So it was always out of town.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I think I should be able to tell them when the annexation was, because the annexed, the north part of it will be moved to that sheet.
Oh, that's
yeah.
right. It is now part of Wickenburg.
Yeah, but that's very recent that they annexed.
Yeah.
But you guys would do all your shopping, like, for food and stuff in
yeah,
town.
Yeah, good old
you
Brayton's.
Wickenburg.
You remember Brayton's?
John Brayton, the mercantile.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember going to Brayton's. You'd get food, hay, grain, carrots, spaghetti, everything in there. Shoes, socks. Brayton's had everything. It was the place for many years. Then, you know, after a while, I don't know when Safeway or whatever came in, but Brayton's was the place.
Okay.
Yeah, so
of course it would have been.
Yeah, so we did all our shopping now and then. Dad took off for Phoenix and did big stuff in Phoenix, but most N. Porter and Company. Have you heard of N. Porter and Company? It was a saddle store in Phoenix, and they had wonderful things. They had beautiful gabardine frontier pants.
Oh.
God, I wish we still had them.
Yeah,
just
side zipper or
yeah,
back?
Yeah, side zipper. Well, the guy's front. Oh, but just beautiful clothes, beautiful saddles and tack and saddle blankets and just...
Are they still in operation?
No, they're gone.
Oh, okay.
They're gone.
Okay.
But it was just beautiful. You still see N. Porter saddles around.
Okay.
But they would be old.
Mm-hmm.
But we go into N. Porter and Hank had... Hank, I don't know what education he had, but he had some education because he taught me all about English riding and I rode in horse shows. Almost always won.
Okay.
Hank had me trained really well.
So the Gold Rush Day parade in town?
Oh, always in the parade, always in the parade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
All my mom and all of us, and we rode on the float or something. It was very fun. We
yeah,
were always in
that's
parade.
Been a big activity forever in this
forever,
town.
Forever, yes.
And the fact that
I have
had
pictures
a float.
Of us. I have pictures of Edie and me riding in the parade.
Okay.
Yeah. And, oh. And of us riding on floats, and we had some high old times, we did.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And church, you attended church when you
no,
were younger?
No, we did not. My family looked down on that foolishness. They would go to the Unitarian Church in Providence or Boston. My dad was from Boston. He was a son of doctors, too. And for funerals and weddings, you know, with gloves and hat and all that, they go. But they look down on religion. And some guests told my brothers and me that we'd go to hell if we didn't go to church.
Right.
And I told my mother, and she snorted. Oh, she thought that was just ridiculous. But we were worried. So we got on our little horses, and we rode into town into the little First Baptist Church.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name of the street, but you know where it is, right down from the insurance office from State Farm.
Yes.
It's right on the corner there. And we tied our little horses in back, and we went in the church, and they welcomed us very warmly. They were going to save our little souls, but it was really stupid. We went to their Sunday school and colored pictures of Jesus, and not even the Coke and donuts did it for us. So that was the end of our religion.
Oh, one didn't, week, didn't last one at all. Sunday?
Maybe two, but maybe no more than that. No more than that.
Okay. What about the Saguaro Theater in town?
Oh, we, Hank Ulrich used to take us kids, guest kids, and John and Dane and me to the Saguaro, starting when old, I can't think of his name, but you know his name. He ran the Saguaro forever.
I'll think of it in a minute
because I've known it forever, but I've drawn a little blank. But what is it? Anyway, at first he had a screen set up in an alley, and we'd all sit on folding chairs and see The Perils of Pauline and all these old westerns.
Great.
Oh, we loved it. And then he built, I'm going to think of his name in just a minute, then he built the old Saguaro Theater. And Hank would take us to the matinees. And one time I was, all the little guest kids, we were all watching The Perils of Pauline and the westerns and all that. And behind us were a bunch of town kids. And this one nasty boy was trying to put chewing gum in my long pigtails.
Oh.
And it was Dom. I grew up and married him.
What were you thinking? Putting
I think
gum
I backhanded
your...
him.
And that was it. That was your courting.
But they used to ride their burros
from
their sheep camps over to our rodeos. And there they were on that side of the rodeo field. We were on this side of the rodeo field. Never to meet until later.
Nice. Yes. Well, and he's like one of 12 children, isn't he?
One of 12.
So that would be the whole gang of town kids,
My gosh. And the Echeverrias pretty well ran the town, the schools, for many years. The girls were valedictorians. The guys were football and basketball. They were an outstanding family. They really were. And they ran the church, the Catholic church. They were very active in the Catholic church.
So you, that was the first time you met Dom when he tried to put gum in your hair?
And I didn't meet him. I didn't find out that was he until later, and he told me. We both laughed about it. No, I knew his brothers and his sisters, but he went off right out of high school. He joined the Navy.
Okay.
And went and did his Navy thing. And so I didn't meet him until I went to the University of Arizona. And I saw him sitting over there, and his brother Roy. Roy was vice president, and I was president of the student council, Wickenburg High. And so Roy and I were good friends. He was a year younger than I. And he said he had a brother in pre-med at the University of Arizona. And I was studying, and I looked across the crowded room, saw this guy who looked like Roy, even more handsome. So I went over and picked him up. That was the beginning of quite a journey.
This kind of sounds like the same move that your dad did to Sophie Fletcher.
Something like that.
Sounds very similar.
Yeah, it was very fiery. Okay, how are we doing?
That's good.
I do go on. Sorry about that.
What about pioneers in Wickenburg history? Like history Ramuda Ranch. What do you know about that?
I know that the little Mexican families along the river raised food for the miners, right? You know about that.
Yeah,
that's what they did. And Joe Quesada, he used to tell my dad that back in those days, grass grew up to the horses' bellies. And that the little streams out in the desert ran, and that there were springs out there, lots of water. So there's a lot more wildlife. Lots of wildlife then, and a lot more grass. It was much more verdant than it is now. Mm-hmm. So we knew that about early Wickenburg.
So really, your mom and dad knew some of the pioneers.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Descendants of the pioneers.
And my dad used to love to tell the guests colorful stories about this old Basque in Wickenburg who helped get his family through the Depression by playing poker and a Basque game called Moose. And always won. And it was old Mike Echeverria, Dom's dad.
Oh.
Yeah, he was a great card player, and he used to win all the time, and he got his family
through. Certainly.
I don't know if that's really true or not, but it was a story my dad used to love to tell the guests.
And the Echeverrias were probably here maybe 10, 20 years prior.
They came.
Before.
Didn't they come in the teens.
1904 is when my grandfather Mike rode into town.
When?
1904.
Yeah, that's
right. We know that because you can prove it, because one of my cousins was in Spain visiting a few years back, and the great aunt Venancia, who lives in the old house, had this drawer full of letters, and she was going through the letters, and there's a letter dated 1904, and he says, and he wrote home, he said, I rode into this town, Wickenburg, Arizona, and I rode across the river, and I was turning north to Congress, to the train, the stockyards, the train station at Congress. He says, I've become very ill, and I'm dying, so I'm riding home to say goodbye. But later, he got married and had 12 kids.
Oh.
He made a good recovery.
Yeah, that healthy Basco blood.
Oh, God, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there.
He came over to this country, I guess, before 1904, and herded sheep in California. And he was charged with taking 2,500 old ewes.
Well, not old ewes, ewes.
Well, used, and drove them all the way to Arizona.
From Riverside.
From Riverside. You could do it then because there was more water and more grass, no population.
Right.
So he did that. Fences. And he took, instead of taking wages, he took sheep and built his own empire.
Kind of the other way around. What he did is the owner, this is the way I heard the story, the owner of the ranch and the sheep said that Arizona, that was too far away from his headquarters in California. And they didn't have cars or anything, man. So it was remote and it was difficult for them to manage. And my grandfather, he told him, he said, I'll sell you the whole Arizona deal, the sheep and the ranch and everything. You send me half the lambs, every crop every year, the front, or split the length of every silly, to pay it off. That's how I understood how he got the ranches and got the sheep.
So is that mostly the inholdings west of town toward Forepaugh, where the airfield is?
Is kind of a fairly specific term that's used in a different way.
Oh.
Inholdings is used in discourse in America today for privately owned parcels surrounded by federal government land within national forests or state parks or national parks. So when you say in holdings, that's kind of a tricky term to use. I would not use that term because it's used that way, and that would not describe anything around here. There's no national parks here or
federal land or BLM.
Oh, there's lots of BLM.
But the Etche Ranch has 40 acres of BLM land. Well, and the runway for the Echeverry Field is BLM. So it has 80 acres of BLM, to my knowledge, on the ranch. And that's it. And the rest is all state and private. And my grandfather hated dealing with the BLM. So he said, you never want anything to do with the BLM because of the Taylor Grazing Act.
Okay.
You know what the Taylor Grazing Act
is? I don't.
Well, it really hurt sheep ranchers and benefited cattle ranchers. It was really not really a very nice thing. And the cattle ranchers had more clout politically, pushed it through, and it disenfranchised a lot of sheep ranchers. And so for that reason, he hated it. And the BLM was a new thing. BLM doesn't go back to the 1800s. It only dates till, don't quote me, I think in the 1930s, but I used to know all this, but
mm-hmm.
I studied range management in college, but I don't remember exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so the history of the ranch, this was sheep ranching all around here, and then there was goats. Congress, something was goats. Tons of goats.
Merinos.
Goats.
Goats.
Angoras.
What are the Angoras?
Yeah.
You know,
Merinos
the
are type of sheep.
Merinos are sheep. Angoras
mohair,
are goats.
Mohair was a big big cash crop. You shear the goats for the mohair. Mohair was big in the economy up until some point, and it fell out of favor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess
I think when
it fell out of favor.
Well, when acrylics came in or synthetics came in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then cattle kind of moved in. But.
Right. How many acres did the family have at the ranch?
I think the Etche Ranch is around 26,000.
Okay.
And I don't know how much it was needed, how much steak, I don't know that.
Mm.
Call my aunt and uncle, they tell you, but
mm-hmm.
it's mostly state land.
Okay.
And that's common in Arizona, they have very small privately owned sections. I don't know, they own a lot of land out here. They turned down $30 million for a few years
But they
ago.
Lease a lot of land
state,
on
the state.
Yeah.
Arizona State of Arizona.
Okay.
Yeah, but not the BLM.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's a little different from other ranches. If you go south here, this is BLM from here. This is almost solid BLM south here.
Okay.
But as you get off to the west, it turns into state. There was a lot of swapping back in the old days for land between the government and state governments, federal and state governments.
Okay.
They had consolidations and different things. You know.
All in trying to settle the west.
I guess really settle land ownership and... Because the old townships had one school section in the middle that was the benefits or the proceeds from the use of that land was to benefit the school system. And that's why they're called school sections. But somehow there's been a lot of swapping going on because there's tons of BLM land with no state, and there's huge sections of state land with no BLM.
Okay.
So they did a lot of consolidation. I don't know the history of that.
Okay.
My uncles could probably tell you a lot more
yeah.
about that.
Yeah. Well, we're mostly concerned with the mm-hmm. sheep ranch and
yeah.
that. So that is good to know. Okay. Let's see where we are on our list. The last few questions, really, to wind up is, how has Wickenburg changed over the years since you've lived here? Like, let's talk about some of the changes in Wickenburg. You're here. You're a full-time resident now.
I am now, as of this year.
So this is brand new for you.
You know, I lived in Wyoming for years, but I can't take the altitude anymore, so here I am,
yeah.
and I love it. I love it. I'm very happy.
Were you full-time in Jackson
Hole?
No,
just part-time. Part-time
like
there.
6 months, six sure, months, seven, seven five.
That was a residence, primary residence. This is a winter home. So
yeah.
Backwards because
I was a snowbird.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm no longer a snowbird. I'm a permanent resident.
Well, that's
good. It is good. I love it. I'm just having a very good time here. It's very comfortable and very nice.
Yeah.
And that's Wickenburg. Back in the day, when we grew up on the ranch, we really had very little to do with Wickenburg except Brayton. And I had a tremendous crush on one of the Bodoroga boys at Safeway when I was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
So I did know some of these. We did know some people, but not well. And Dwight Pemberton, of course, had the La Cabana, and I knew some horrible things about him. But we don't need to talk about that.
Right. But you just never really needed to leave the ranch.
No. So we didn't know Wickenburg people very much. So the change that I see now is that if any time I go to town, I have to allow plenty of time because you've got to visit with everybody.
Oh.
It's so friendly. It's just a friendly, nice, wonderful, supportive town.
Sure.
Very nice.
And you go to the events. You're involved with the museum, and you go to some of the Del Webb events. And
I go to everything I can get the energy up for.
Yeah.
I love
yeah.
it. Very friendly town. A lot of lovely, fun things going on.
Good.
Very nice.
Do you have a favorite memory about Wickenburg that you can talk about, whether it's current or past or
Favorite memory? Well, there are so many. Most of them would be about how friendly and warm the people are.
You still about grandma's cabin down on the river?
It's
like telling that story.
Oh, yeah, that's a good story.
Okay, let's hear that one.
Poor grandma, she came over from Spain, 17 years old. Grandpa picked her up in a hotel in Flagstaff, a Basque hotel. And I said, hi, honey, and married her, brought her to Wickenburg, and there were a little row of cottages down by the river where Quick Print is now.
Okay.
And he rented one of those for her, and the first English word she learned was next door, because they were all whorehouses.
Oh,
poor
whoops.
Grandma.
So the miners would come and knock on the little cabins.
Yeah.
And she happened to be a legitimate girl.
Next door.
That was the first thing she learned.
Do you remember Carl Miller's?
I don't.
He was a police chief here, and he's a Madrill. So their family came in the late 1800s. Had a big ranch out by what's now Lake Alamo, along the Santa Maria River, and they came to town. Anyway, he was assistant police chief, and he took me around some years ago and showed me where all the bordellos were around Wickenburg and where they moved around. They shut them down, and then they'd pop up over here, and then shut them back, and then pop up over here. And all the different places where they were from the, say, the turn of the century up until, well, whenever.
I guess it was a necessity.
Oh, that's a favorite. That's a favorite memory.
I guess it was a necessity.
Well, there was all miners out here.
About
thousands of miners living around town.
Right.
And hardly anybody in town. I don't know what the population was, maybe 1,200 people or something. Mm-hmm. Like that.
Very small. Very small.
Thousands of miners all around here. Cowboys and sheep herders in this little tiny town. So
the story on Carl Miller, the hacienda used to run much bigger than it does now. I mean, big ways, just in things coming down and lumber and all this wild, big waves. And we used to grab our swimming pool mattresses and go surfing. He would have be turned into Child Protective Service now, but back then we'd get on those mattresses and away we'd go. Well, one time my mother was bombing down the Hacienda over the big waves on the pool mattress.
And she got to the bridge, and there was a whole bunch of town people looking at the flood. It was a big flood. And Carl Miller said, "You get out of there. If you don't get out of there, I'm going to arrest you." And she looked up and said, "Carl Miller, I taught you to swim in my swimming pool when you were just a tadpole, so you just shut up." And he did. Yeah, and they after that, they formed the Haciampa Yacht Club. And other people started surfing the Haciampa.
That's what the yacht club was?
Yes, that's what the Haciampa Yacht Club was. They still have it now. I don't know what it is now. But that's, my mother started it.
Wow, I haven't heard that.
Air mattresses, basically.
Air mattresses.
Air mattress, yeah, yacht club in Wickenburg.
The Haciampa Yacht Club. Oh, I can't believe we used to do that. But we'd hear the river, we'd hear it roaring
sure,
up there.
Sure.
We'd get all excited and take off our shoes.
Because it would only run for like maybe an hour or two.
Oh, no, it might run for a couple of days. But
okay.
It ran a lot more than it does now.
Mm-hmm.
But those floods were something else.
Mm-hmm.
We were warned that rattlesnakes would come down and dead cows. You know, we never saw any of that.
Yeah.
A lot of lumber, old miners' cottages, a lot of junk would come down. But no snakes or dead cows that I remember.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was fun.
Yeah, that does sound like fun.
Surfing the river.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That was a favorite memory.
I think the last thing that we haven't covered, that I haven't covered, unless there's something that you have thought about, is your married life. So now you've grown up on the Ramuda Ranch. You and Dom have courted. You've gotten married. And now let's finish this interview with a little bit about your married life and children.
My mother said, "You made your bed, go lie in it," because I did not pay any attention to her. She said, "You can have a difficult time marrying a Basque." And the Echeverias were appalled because I didn't know how to cook. And I said, I can learn how to cook. And I did.
And you did.
Years later, one time, Dom said, "My God, you cook better than my mother." I nearly levitated. Oh, my God. And I learned to do it.
Good.
But it was difficult because the Basque idea of marriage, the woman works beside the husband. Forget perfume and nurturing and all that gooey stuff. You work.
Right.
And I worked.
Well, and you learned this growing up on the ranch, really.
That's right. Yeah, and I loved livestock. I loved the sheep. Loved them. Got in trouble with the other Echeverias because they thought it was improper for a wife to be out herding sheep. I loved herding sheep. I had so much fun doing that.
Yeah. But, and you did it. You didn't listen to the other Echeverria women.
Oh, no, heck no. I never listened to that stuff. So, and I was Dom's business partner. He had the GI Bill for 5 years of college. But the last 3 years of vet medicine, the GI Bill ran out. And I had some war bonds, and he got some credit at a bank, and we bought 246 old ewes. And those were the beginning of our sheep.
Okay.
So I was his business partner from the get-go. And also, I wrote all his papers for him in college, because I was good at that. So I learned a lot about vet medicine. Learned a lot about a lot.
Sure.
And started having babies. I had 8 of them in 12 years.
Where were you living at this time?
We started in Fort Collins, where he was going to college, and then we moved to Longmont, Colorado, because it was centrally located, because we didn't have any land of our own. So we had to lease farms and ranches, which we did all over Colorado and Wyoming, and some in New Mexico, and one over in Nebraska. We just were gypsies. We traveled all around to all these places we leased, but Longmont was central, so that's where we raised the kids, and we lived there, and I did all the office work and all that, and he did the sheep, and the kids and I, he'd call us up and say, "Get the kids out of school. I can't make it, and we've got 6 trainloads to unload at such and such a stockyard," and we'd jump in the station wagon, we'd dash over there, and we'd unload sheep, and I remember one time I had 3 kids with cystic fibrosis, and I and another family sort of created and ran the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation for both Wyoming and Colorado for about 20 years. And I had been to some event, and Dom called and said to go unload these sheep. And I can remember trailing these sheep to the rented pasture in my beautiful designer suit.
Yes.
Luckily, I had some loafers in the back of the car, so I took off my high heels. I thought, oh, this is fun. But it was just such a juxtaposition, and all the kids, they loved it. We were all really good at herding sheep.
Well, you just do what you need to do.
Do what you need to do.
You don't necessarily think about it. You just do it.
And then Dom bought 4 ranches at an auction. He hired an airplane and said to Dave, come with me. And they went to Casper, and Dave didn't know what was going on. He said his dad sat there, and every now and then he'd touch the brim of his hat. And he ended up with these 4 ranches. And I was at a hospital in Denver where one of my sons was. Spent a lot of time in hospitals.
Oh.
And I was driving home, and I turned on the radio, and it said, Dr. Echeverry of Longmont has bought 4 ranches at auction in Casper. And holy shit! Got a ticket for speeding. What a surprise.
Yeah.
And then he bought 2 more ranches, and so things changed. We loved our ranches. I'd take the kids out. The nuns would let us go to 2 weeks early because the kids are already smart. And they get out, and they were glad to get rid of us.
Oh,
used to call me up and say, Sophie, you must talk to your children. They're heretics. And I'd say, okay, I'll talk to them. We'd have some conversations. Anyway, as soon as we could, we'd go to the ranches, and there's a whole other long, big story about living on the ranches.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wild, wild life. We didn't have anything that would break down. No plumbing, no electricity, no phone, nothing.
Yes.
It was just wonderful, very primitive, very wild, and we loved it.
Yes.
And we lived there, and then in 1970, Dom was killed in a crash. And the kids and I carried on. That's a whole other story. So,
what brought you back to Wickenburg? When did you get back to Wickenburg?
Oh, I got back to Wickenburg.
And what brought you back here?
Oh, my sons moved here.
Okay.
Joe moved up here. And my brothers were here, and Dave moved up here, and they were, Dave came down here from Colorado to set up his contracting business because his wife suffered seasonal affect disorder, couldn't stand Colorado, so she grew up in Phoenix. So he moved to Wickenburg, hoping that it would be a good place because of the Burden connection, and it has been pretty good.
Was that in the 80s?
When was it? Yeah. And so that's how we got back to Wickenburg.
Okay.
I had moved to Phoenix to, what did I move to Phoenix for after Dom died? I went down to Phoenix to go to college. That's what I did. I went to college. And I lived in Phoenix for 18 years.
Oh, that's when you became a counselor.
Yeah. And so I hung out in Phoenix for 18 years, and I had a wonderful time. I'm not a city girl, but I lived at the Biltmore. It sounds very impressive, but it's not. I had a little, what they call villas. It was just a little townhouse thing. And, oh, my God, we loved that thing. We had more darn fun in Phoenix. We really loved Phoenix, but then they moved up here.
Okay, and David built this house for you.
Yeah, Dave built this house for exactly as much money as I got from my Biltmore house.
Okay.
And we built it, as I said, to accommodate his mother-in-law.
Yeah.
And it's just been a wonderful house. I love this house. Good. It's so easy. You can tell. Look at it. It'll accommodate dogs and cats and kids.
It's very comfortable.
Feed the birds.
It's very serene and peaceful.
It is. It's just an easy house.
Is it Family History? Is the museum ever, does it ever talk much about the Echeverria Field, the Army Corps Base's history?
There's a diorama of the field.
There's a tremendous amount of misinformation or lack of information of the history of that. You know, a lot of brave men trained out there and died in Sicily and Normandy and South Pacific that trained out there.
Yeah.
Governor Meekham trained out there. But my grandfather gave that land to the Army as a donation, as a grateful American naturalized citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often been surprised at how little information or historical attribution or reverence.
Yes, Grandpa Mike should get credit for that.
Huh?
Yeah, so much history is often this oral history,
mm-hmm,
and doesn't get transcribed or written down. And so this is the importance of this grant here, and this could be an area of interest that maybe needs to be filled up.
I interviewed former Governor Meekham for the museum back 12 years ago or something. What was the name of Annie Smith's friend who was the director back then?
Mike something.
So I started on this project researching history. I was amazed how little information and how knowledge there was about it. The city owns it, and there's people there who didn't even understand that there were airplanes out there.
Well, every day is always the first day of the rest of our lives to get this history recorded.
If you study the history of the glider pilots, there was a colonel here who died, Jack Seawright, and he was a highly decorated colonel who flew glider into France and Germany and that. And it's an amazing story. And he had all these books on the history of the glider pilot program, and once I read it, I was absolutely astonished at the crazy bravery of those people to fly a glider into foreign country, foreign territory, under fire, and land in a place you've never been to before. That's just something on a map you sort of aim your glider towards and hope you make it. And if you don't, you land wherever you can manage to land. That's crazy.
Absolutely crazy. Yeah, fighting wars back then was very different than how we fight wars.
It was more dangerous than what the paratroopers did. It was absolutely crazy.
They trained right out here.
They trained out there.
They lived at Remuda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the pilots trained out there later on. A lot of the town council people about it didn't even realize that they trained pilots out there, regular pilots. Like Governor Meekham flew P-51s and P-38s in Germany, in France, and trained out here in Wittenberg. Mm-hmm. And nobody knew that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely nobody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
Or seems to know.
Well, it's getting recorded right now, so that is a start, and it'll get written down
here.
That's
important. Important stuff.
We often are very frustrated by the museum's lack of historical display.
They say money follows art, so that's why it's
a
wonderful art museum.
The diorama is cute, it's a well-done little thing, but it's just a little diorama, you know.
And the section on guest ranches, dude ranches, is about what is big as my stove there. And they said, and I told somebody, Marianne or somebody, well, you didn't do much. And they said, well, we have a picture of Edie Dallas. We have a picture of your mother. Big deal.
The mining history is so underdone here that I just find it astonishing.
Yeah, there's nothing. A little bit about Henry Wickenburg.
There's places that it's a
there's
mining history displays. And this
certainly,
on mining.
Certainly.
Forget all the sheep and the cattle and the dude ranches. This place came into existence because of mining. Nobody wanted to move up here on the river and risk Indian attack.
Well, the museum, we're getting into a whole different line.
And also at one point,
question and stuff. But so just to finish this interview up, is there anything that we have not covered that you would like to share and have recorded for
this
interview?
I'm sure I'll think of it the minute you walk out the door.
Okay, then call me.
Okay.
And for the Oral History Project, April 2nd and 3rd, is that something you'd like to be part of?
Oh, yeah, that I think that would be interesting and fun.
Okay.
I think. I hope.
Okay. Yeah, I hope so, too. I'm sure it will be. It's the first annual, so it's all...
And there, I will endeavor not to wander, so...
Okay.
Okay.
I love your wandering, Sophie.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much for today.
You are very welcome.